This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, this is Pablo Zabaleta.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Kevin Phillips.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travelled to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast would not happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to become a socio, to become one of our members, and get an extra big interview every month, plus loads of bonus content. So go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter, patreon.com/Graham Hunter, and we'll bring you joy.
It's been a long-standing ambition of mine to unite the two world superpowers of football, Scotland and Uruguay. Same population base and really very nearly the same number of World Cups won. And therefore, when Scotland and Uruguay came together, it had to be me, and Martin Gregg in the background, it has to be said, and Gustavo Poyet. The ugly part of it was his ongoing feud with Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes on the subject of white men can jump. And because of his basketball background and the background of his father, double Olympian for Uruguay at basketball, Gustavo Poyet was able to, for example, explain exactly why he jumped so high for Zaragoza and Chelsea and Spurs, and why goalkeepers always launched the ball at him. The Copa America 1995, and remember, this is a Copa America summer, was perhaps the second greatest moment in Uruguay's history after the Maracanazo, when in 1950 Uruguay, or was it Scotland, beat Brazil in the World Cup final 1-0 at the Maracanã. But to come forward to the Copa America, their version of the European Championships, and win against world champions Brazil in Montevideo, well, if you're listening, Gus will take up the rest of the story. And do you remember Paris in 1995? Do you remember Arsenal, Seaman, Keown, Naim? Yes, Naim, from the halfway line. How did that goal go in? And could any of his teammates from Zaragoza reproduce it a couple of days later when they sobered up back in Zaragoza? The answers to all of these and many, many other questions are in one of the greatest big interviews we've ever done with the mighty Gustavo Poyet. Welcome, Gus, Gustavo. Before I even go to the mechanics of a game, and before we even try to explain to English speakers what llegada means, because you had llegada.
Yes, true.
And I'm very glad that you arrived here today. I want to touch on the fact that you, your country, your compatriots, do have something special, that it is not a fluke that a country so small in population can not only produce consistently really special international teams, but when you take a Uruguayan of nearly any quality from good up to great and put them in a team, special things happen. You're a Montevidean.
Yeah.
Flipping well, explain it to me. What's going on?
I think we need to start from something that only a few people knows all over the world. And funny enough, I done a presentation on my FA course here on the Pro License about us. We got an organization in Uruguay. Uruguay is very small. Everybody knows that. We are only 3.5 million. But we got an organization called ONFI, which is an organization of football for kids, which they play from the age 5 to 12 all over the country. They are all registered in one organization. Okay, in every single neighborhood, there is a team of under 5, under 6, under 7, under 8, under 9, under 10, under 10. Yeah, and they compete in areas, and then they compete in the cities, and then they compete against other cities all over the country. Okay, now we've been trying to control that because it becomes at very early ages madness. I mean, pressure. You have to win, which is not right for a kid of 7 or 8. And I understand that, and I totally agree that that is not right. But we do compete. And we do compete on the basis of things that maybe nowadays it would be crazy to say to a kid. Like my father said to me when I was 9, I was playing a game against the Argentinians, and he said, here in Uruguay, we don't lose against the Argentinians.
And he meant it.
He said, he completed the sentence saying, you can go and sleep in your uncle's house tonight if you lose against the Argentinians. Now, somehow, you win that game. Call it whatever. Call it you were better, and you're lucky, and you're better, and you win. But you already start thinking, everything I done before the game, my contract is in the drawer. Finish. My whatever it is that you can think, my ego, my appearance, is gone. It's very rare to find a Uruguayan player which is looking too much about himself. I don't know if you find one. You know, like he has to have this hairstyle or this cut or this tattoo and show this car. We are not that kind of people. I'm talking about the majority, can be one. We are more the ones that we just go, want to go to the top, sign a good contract. Like I said, put it there, sideways, and now defend your team to the maximum possible. Sometimes we pass that line as well. That's why you are right in saying that one Uruguayan, whatever level he is, in your team, will always give you something extra. He will always try to give to that club, which is part of his life, something that maybe others don't understand like that football.
Do you think that you can teach that in other countries where it's been lost? Can you reintroduce it? Because it feels to me that that is a precious commodity that because of kids maybe having a little bit more wealth or being spoiled or televisions or computers or social media, whatever it is, it feels to me that once that's gone, in a culture, it's gone forever.
Well, I think because another thing that we always say in Uruguay, things happen always 20 years later, 10 years later. So we're still a little bit behind on all that, which means that you can still go into Uruguay and finding that player, that even if it's not the best assumption, is going to incredibly give you something different to the rest. Because I'm seeing it week in, week out now with the players in Uruguay that they're leaving at the age of 19, 20, going to another country and becoming really important. The Rascaeta, he went to Cruzeiro in Brazil, now he's going to Flamengo. It looked like everybody wants to buy him because he's bringing something different. And he's small, technically good, he's a number 10, but still having that attitude of, it's like, I don't know how to explain, it's like if we are losing, we are better. Because it hurts so much.
It's a stimulus.
Yes, it's like, now I'm losing. No, this is impossible. I cannot accept this. And then you go to another level. Sometimes we even say, why we don't start the game like that? And I think when the national team is together, we do. Because we are like together. Now, sometimes in clubs you get used to the weak, no? Weak, the nice life, your teammates. And then you start the game naturally. But then something happens and you concede a goal in it, like the Uruguayan chip is coming and
somebody talks to you, somebody leaves a boot in your ankle, yeah. You go 1-0 down and then
bang. But it's incredible. And you can see everywhere. If you see the reaction of those players, you know, you name names. Suarez is very well known worldwide, but Godin. You look in a game of Atletico Madrid and they are losing or they are 0-0 and it's a corner and you know that he's going to head it. And I think the position knows as well. So stop him. And somehow, it gets between three and he had it, and he get it. And those situations are the ones that why when we get to that level, I hope Jimenez follows the steps of Godin and the Suarez and the Cavani's and the, you know, Forlan, who will say that Diego Forlan, after his passing in Man United, will be golden boot in Europe and the best player of the World Cup in 2010. All those things made us special. I agree with you that I hope that this lasts and not this new technology, society, and whatever is coming.
Softness.
Yeah, but I think the worst of that, and I, without getting into any politics, it's like somebody else is trying to decide which kind of life we have to live. Mm-hmm. And they don't let us live the life that we like or we want. That is, we are not, I don't think Uruguay goes into the life of anybody else. We don't get involved in anything internationally because we are so small, we cannot do it. But it looks like people want to get there and tell us what is right and what is wrong, what we have to do and what we don't have to do. And you start asking questions yourself. And the kids, they grow up thinking about this in a different way that we, saying, well, why?
Yeah.
Why? Me? Why? I understand the point, why they want to do things differently, but I would like them to understand why we are different. And that way it brings us together. Difference, you know, if it was all the same, if we're gonna live the same life, it's gonna be boring.
It's very boring,
you know. Now, we know what is gonna be your answer, so you don't ask me any question. So we know he's gonna say the same. And I think the real thing is that we are different, and you can mix those things to get the best of a football team.
Well, will there be a slight jump aside because I want to come back to your dad? Was there room in Uruguay to see Jimenez crying his eyes out during the end of the France game in the World Cup, or would that be regarded as wrong or soft or not the Uruguayan culture? Because in the World Cup, when the game is gone and he's playing at the back and there's four or five minutes left, and he's already broken because the worst thing that can happen with Cavani out injured is that France have won and Uruguay are going out. And it was an iconic moment. And iconic moments like that where sports people, men or women at the elite level, betray their true feelings, mm-hmm. Are beautiful and by definition they're true, but is there room in Uruguayan sports culture to allow a man to look like that?
I think we know that he's probably feeling, maybe I lost my chance. I don't know if it's going to happen again. I don't know if I'm going to play another World Cup. This was my World Cup, and we were there competing with the champion, no? At the end, so he gives everything. You know, to a point that is so exhausted that when he finishes and he's out, he cannot contain the emotions. And I think it's natural. I think it defines us. It's another image that I don't know if you see it, which is incredible. Is I think it's Rodriguez. It's in a qualification for the World Cup. I think it's the game that you play, the playoff,
yeah,
the fifth of South America. I think we play Central America, and you get a concussion, a really bad concussion, and it's coming out, but slowly he starts recovering, and the doctors already made the decision to change him, and he goes crazy, and there's no way you can get him out of the pitch. He starts pushing the doctor, he starts pushing everybody, he's telling the coach, no, I'm playing, because we think that if we give you that little advantage, yeah, to that left back which is on the bench, and he's coming on, and he does better than me, I'm not going to the World Cup. I'm not giving you nothing. You need to take him out, you know, like a prison to get out of the pitch. And it was wrong because maybe he had a concussion.
Yeah.
You know how dangerous they are. But at the end of the day, he was showing that even when we are not perfectly right, we still wanted to be on the pitch and to be, you know, in a position where we cannot lose it. Because if we lose it, we lose part of our life.
Did you have an advantage that you grew up with that teaching, that culture in soccer, but you had an Olympian father?
Yeah,
you know, father basketball was player. Elite, elite.
I tell you...
1960 Olympics, right?
Yeah, he was better than me. I think that until I didn't... I would say until I didn't win the Copa America 95 or until I didn't play regularly at Chelsea and Spurs... People never put me up on a level with my father. It was impossible because he was always, hey, your father played seven, no, I don't know how many World Cups, two Olympian Games. He won five, championship in a row in Uruguay with Tabaré and a team from basketball and that. So he was really, he was captain of the national team. So he was really someone special. But the funny part is that my father played basketball by accident because he loved football. He wanted to be a football player. And one day with a few friends, they went past outside this basketball court and they decided to have a go. And they liked it and they started playing a little bit more. And then my father was big. And then Uruguay, I'm big, proper, boom, yeah, strong. And he became that player, no, that representative of what Uruguay is and obviously was at that time, you know, going in Olympic Games, playing against the Russians, where the Russian guy was 2 meters 13 and my father was 195 or 196, the tallest in Uruguay. And he was marking this huge player. And he had to look and find a way to stop him.
To compete.
But that's us. We have to find a way. I know that we always look at the bad side. I understand that, the bad tackle, whatever it happens. But the idea is that we cannot accept defeat because you are better than me. We cannot accept defeat because you are bigger than me. We cannot accept defeat because you are quicker than me. So I need to find a way. So you're playing against a fast player. Okay, first you go tight and you talk to your teammate. Cover me. Because I want you to go tight. You don't go and play your own game. No, you help each other. You're looking for each other. Or you give him 2 or 3 meters. Because if he's going to turn. So you manage whatever situation is, physically, mentally, technically, the best way, you find a way to...
Solutions.
Solutions. And we find it naturally. And we find it sometimes individually, which means without the help of the coach... And with our teammates, with our little groups inside the pitch.
So when I talk often about, in my opinion, the difference between football and Spain, I have not lived Uruguay. I talk about seeing a lot of devolved intelligence on the pitch in Spain compared to England, where often I see regimented, coach-driven solutions and players who don't naturally look for solutions and are witty and clever.
Totally.
That intelligence on the pitch, for whatever reason, is the concept you're talking about.
I go no doubt, because from early ages, you go to places at the age of 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, that you go to places where, oof, it's going to be difficult today. So what, it's like you yourself, it's like, what am I going to do today in this environment or in this pitch or against that guy, which is very good. And you already, it's incredible what I'm saying, but it's true. We're already thinking about how we're going to win the game. And we talk, you know, and we say to, for example, the best player, we need you today. We need you today. We need you more than ever because they're very good. And the guy already starts thinking, okay, I'm special. You know, and I start producing in important games. Or the opposite, you go to the goalkeeper and you say, today, if you don't come out, they're going to cross 55 times. We need you. And it's incredible because it is between. Probably the coach already told him. But I think sometimes for the player, a teammate giving you that responsibility, but at the same time understanding that you can do it, that confidence, it brings players a little bit to another level. And that's why sometimes when nobody counts on us in Uruguay, we appear from somewhere and we do something special.
You said in that little getting yourself mentally prepared, you said that pitch. What kind of surfaces did you play on? Beautiful grass, like Wembley, the whole...
No. You don't imagine. It was even a moment that it was... You know, when you start playing at a better level, that to show goals to people from my time in Uruguay, it was like, say, yeah, I know what you're going to say. Look at the pitch. It was no grass in there. It was... And... That, for example, me, that I was slow. I was a slow player, no, in terms of speed. So because of that, naturally, I understood that I needed to do things quicker, mentally. Mm. Because if not, if I would wait, stop the ball, look, too late, 5 minutes, it's gone. So I needed to be ready. I needed to be ready to hit one touch with any part of the foot, the right foot, left foot, inside, outside. So I improved technically.
What do you find out about your mind? Not simply in terms of football, but if you go on a little journey into your mind saying, help me, save me from the fact that my lungs and my legs won't make me elite. You find a lot about your personality, and the mind is an underused muscle for most people. What did you find out about yourself?
Well, I suffered a lot. I was few times nearly out of football. You know, I went to France. My idea was to go to Nice. I couldn't get there for a foreign place. At that time, it was only two foreigners. So I finished in a second division team,
Grenoble,
in the middle of the Alps. I didn't play well. I didn't adapt well. It was difficult for me coming from Uruguay, even to the pitches. So fast, so quick. We were playing Saturday night. It was always a little bit wet. And I'm thinking, what happened here?
It was green and fast and the ball would skid. And
incredible.
All the things you timed yourself to understand were gone.
And the second year, the president wanted everybody out and they wanted me out. And I was a Uruguayan. I'm saying, I'm not leaving. I'm staying here. I have my contract. And then I had to leave at the end. And I was like 6-7 months without playing football at the age of 21, 32. Wow. And you're thinking, So then I was a little bit lucky that you need all the time. You need. If you don't have luck, you know, the right moment at the right time. They took me to Zaragoza, a coach from Uruguay with a player who was a star, Uruguayan, Suarez. And I started learning other things. Like you're saying, working on my brain, okay, I cannot play a front here because I was playing a front when I was young. I need to play backwards. I need to improve my fitness. I need to start understanding to play, you know, looking forward. I was playing back to goal, arriving. We're going to talk about La Llegada. The timing, but the timing I had it because of my style of playing. But so many things that took me a year. And at the end of that year, I scored 2 goals in a playoff to go down. And kind of people say, okay, well, this guy maybe. You know, it's cheap. Let's keep him. And I started growing up as a... I had a role in that Zaragoza. I had a position on the pitch that I needed to do certain things, you know. For example, it's nice to me to hear, you know, teammates from that time saying, when we have a goal kick, we knew that that goal will go to Gus and he will jump and kill himself to flick it, and he will flick it. So the other ones, they knew he will win it and they will run behind, blah, 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 blah. And I had a role, the same role, arriving late, scoring more than 10 goals per season without taking penalties and blah, blah, blah. So you got a role inside your team.
But before we go all manual, before we go to Roma Reda and Zaragoza, for people in this country, you maybe could compare to Leeds. They need to be up. They need to be in the Primera, both of them. I need to hold you back to exactly that, the jump. Was it natural that you and your dad and, I don't know, the rest of the family had the jump?
Yeah.
Did you? You're tall, but... tall men don't always jump well, because if you're tall,
you don't
have to learn.
I know where you're coming from, and I tell you exactly why. Basketball is basketball. I played basketball when I was young. And that's the, I don't know how you call it in England, the double rhythm. Double, we call it 1-2-3, you know, like you do 1-2, bah. That action in basketball where you have those 2 steps before putting the ball next to the basket. That's the same kind of action that you need to do to jump in a certain, when you jump with one leg, no, obviously. That's a timing thing.
We have listeners in China and in the States and in South America and in South Africa, but the majority will be in Britain and Ireland. And basketball is known here, but it's not so big. So describe the 1-2-3 leap.
Well, tell us
what you mean.
I think when you start playing basketball, okay, first thing you do, you try to play with the ball, no, basket, to bounce
dribble.
It and to dribble and to cover it and plenty of things. But as soon as you start doing something in front of the basket, it's not just to throw from 10 meters, no. It's about an action that you're running into the basket without opposition, and there is a moment that you can hold the ball in your hand and make 2 steps, you know, 1-2, and jump with the knee that you made the first step a little bit high, so just place it. In Spanish, it's doble ritmo, so it would be double rhythm. It's like a double, no? 1-2, and out.
I think we call it the layup in English.
The layup, but you have to make 2 steps. Eh?
Yeah.
It's 1-2, high. So you made a step with your right when you're going to jump with your left, okay? It's more natural when you're a right footed to jump with your left. And that's something to really go the highest you can be. It's a little bit of an impulse to go high. You know, and to be honest... luckily, I didn't have too many, but the 5 or 6 goals I conceded from corners, I remember.
They hurt.
It's still hurting.
Yeah.
Because it was my position, my decision, my timing.
Were you jumped?
Well, for example, when I was at jump in Paraguay with the national team, my teammates asked me to mark Ayala. They said, you have to mark him.
Ruben Ayala, El Raton.
The central defender, the one is jump really high. And I was marking him. No, that's the Argentinian one, yeah. This is Paraguay. And then when I went to jump, it was all over me. It was gone. I couldn't jump. And it made an incredible head. And we lost 1-0. And it's there. That's Uruguay. It's still there.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I want to drag you then a little bit sideways because when all of this was conditioning you, and you've already mentioned this event, one of the things that should be the sweetest in your career, I'm not saying it's bitter, but, you know, the Maracanazo is Uruguay doing all the Uruguayan things against Brazil in 1950 at the Maracana and winning the World Cup final. So to repeat that in 95 against a Brazil who I think were reigning world champions from the USA in 94, the year before, for me, you're in that team, you win it, you do it in front of you, it finishes in Montevideo, you know, you could practically see your home from the stadium, but it wasn't a beautiful experience for you, if I understand correctly, because you had to alter everything you did and wanted to do, because there was a for good or bad, there was a closed mind from the coach about how Uruguay played then. And it wasn't a completely satisfactory winning the Copa America.
I'm so pleased that we won it because the pressure was incredible. I mean, as an information to the people that are listening, the Copa America and Euro in South America, it was playing until 1970-something, a home and away, like qualifications until the final. And in 80-something, they started playing in one country, like the European Cup.
European Championships.
And that 95, it was the first time that I was playing in Uruguay. Now, incredibly, Uruguay until then never ever lost a game of Copa America at home. Either won or drew. And now we had to play the whole Copa America at home. So it was not only a matter of winning it, not losing a game. because your name is going to be there. In the whole century, Uruguay never lost at home in the Copa America. So I remember going to the third game where the manager made four or five changes because we were qualified already to the last eight. And the players that were playing were thinking, you know, saying, thank you. Now we're playing. We didn't play. And we got responsibility of not losing.
It's on me now.
Luckily, we didn't. We drew that game. I only enjoy it, and going back to the question, I only enjoy the semi-final against Colombia because I play a little bit further up on the pitch. What I was used in Zaragoza at that time, it was a player with the freedom in a team that was controlling games to go and attack the box most of the time. Okay, I was a very offensive midfielder, we can call it. And I went to Uruguay because the manager that unfortunately is not with us anymore, Hector Núñez, he went to Zaragoza to convince me to go and play in a three in the middle, defensive-minded. That's it, you know? And I was a little bit, you know, talking to him, saying, I don't know if I can do it. And he was so convinced.
Don't know if I can do it or don't know if I want to do it. Same thing or different things?
I think it was a can because I don't think I was a player that was able to really go into the pitch thinking, okay, I'm going to defend today. You were taking away from me my youth when I was a number nine or my career as a football player, which I was an offensive midfielder arriving in the box. So I didn't have too many chances during the Copa America to get into the box, like we want to talk later on. To arrive late, to have that timing. And that game against Colombia was special because Fonseca, one of the strikers, was injured. And the manager decided to put another midfielder behind me and put me a little bit higher with Francescoli and leave the striker up front. So I had a little bit of freedom. I had a little bit of participation. I was getting in the box. I got involved in the second goal. I was inside the box and the ball went over me in the first goal. So I was where I wanted to be. Saying that, moment of the Copa America is final is finished. We are 1-1 against Brazil. We're going to penalties. We are at home. And the assistant manager comes to me and look at me and say, you are the sixth. And that moment you go, all right, six, not bad. You know what? I was not penalty taker. I have to be honest. I'm honest. I was not the kind of player that would be in a position where if you give me 10, I would say, yeah, I score 8. No. Because it was not my quality. If people that got the quality to be penalty takers and people that they cannot take penalty. It was not a threat I took with the national team in Uruguay in the young, in a tournament in Qatar. I took in River in my country. I took a few penalty shootouts, but I was not a natural penalty taker. Now, you know what's happened. No? Goal, 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 goal. And when they started scoring, you start thinking, oh, it's going to come to me.
Francescoli, Roberto Carlos, Bengoechea, Zinho, Herrera, Tulio misses.
That's the moment of my life.
Listen, sorry, Gus. Tulio's a regular yeah. Listener. Listen, man, I'm sorry. I warned you not to listen to this episode, okay?
He's... I tell you, when then Gutierrez scored the fourth, Dunga scored for Brazil, and then Manteca Martinez, which was a penalty taker. I always say that I think I was more nervous than Martinez, who was taking the penalty. He was used to take penalties. I was in the middle of the park thinking, please don't. You know, because also, imagine that he was taking the penalty to win. But then if it was my turn at the end, if Brazil scored the six, I'm taking the penalty not to lose.
Not to lose.
Which is totally different, okay? And when he scored, it was... what a moment. Like you say, Copa America at home. Yes, I supported my teams like, you know, Zaragoza, Chelsea, Spurs, Grenoble, River in Uruguay, my team. When you are in, you really support that team. But when it's your country, involve other things, you know? I got friends who they told me later on, no, you know, they tell you, you know how nice it was for me to go to work next day? You know, my friend won the Copa America yesterday. And we are all celebrating and they were feeling really proud. When it's family and friends, is something really special. It was incredible.
Because it's a gift being given to you to make them feel like that.
I tell you, we don't know how lucky we are. and you don't realize sometimes, unfortunately, until you win things. Mm-hmm. It happened to me in Zaragoza, luckily, and at Chelsea, but in Uruguay as well. People, when they... I'm making it in Uruguay, clearly, no? A country that we always suffer. That night, there were no health problems, there were no financial problems, there were no work issues, there were no family problems. Everything is gone. The only thing is there is people celebrating in the streets, going mad, being Uruguayans, you know, feeling what we feel when we are in there. And that makes football something very special. That sometimes we don't give in that special treatment because it brings people together. And that celebration in Uruguay, I can tell you, was spectacular.
Gus, you know, I did a little introduction to you when we sat down here in Kensington, and I said to you, the reason this podcast exists is the things that you're talking about. So football sometimes is grubby, or people make mistakes, or they cheat, or they lie. But it's beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful human inventions ever, like art, like theatre, like dance. And it gives you the capacity to make people float on a cloud. It gives a passion for your entire life. It gives you something you want to pass on to your kids. And we get caught up in the rubbish. And I'm sad to say that our profession gets mixed up about what football's for. It's not there to beat with a stick. Mm-hmm. You try to correct it.
Yeah.
You point out when people have done badly. But it's one of the most glorious inventions that the human race has ever come up with.
And the recognition of what you've done. You say something about Jimenez today. The most embarrassing moments of my career, I would call it like that because every time I see it, I feel embarrassed, you know, like embarrassed, is when we won the Cup Winners Cup with Zaragoza in Paris. There is an image of me on television crying, but bad. Yeah. And you don't imagine how many people in Zaragoza told me after, you made that, you know, you made me cry because you were crying on television.
You're going to do that now as well. You're going to pass that on now.
But it's like that because that image of me, when I see myself, I think, look at me. Like, you know, I cannot look at me. But when you meet that woman, that he was born in Zaragoza, waited all her life to win a European competition, and he win it, and he's so happy. And then this guy is crying. Boof, he break down. And it happened to me a few times. And then you start realizing, like you said before, how lucky we are to be in that moment and participating of that. And that makes me go back to Zaragoza and have those moments with people that they are older than me, and they're still making you feel someone special because you give them something that they cannot buy. You cannot buy a Cup Winners Cup. Okay, I'm going to buy this one to feel it. It happened for you or it doesn't. You are a supporter of that team that your life, and maybe you will never feel it. But the day it gets, is unique. And that made us special. We're still having our group, by the way, WhatsApp, the 25 players of that team that we're still in contact, and we're still giving, you know, some stick when somebody does something good or bad, and the happy birthday.
Whoa. Sorry, guys. Like, you've just gone from football is religion, football yes. is passion, or football is a great way to give your mate stick 25 years later.
Because
that's such a part of football.
We love each other. We love each other because we were lucky to be together. And when somebody does something great, we all feel for him. And when somebody have a little issue, like, for example, I had in Bordeaux, they are all there.
You know, to give you
advice. Yeah, to give you advice, to tell you that, to back you up. And it's incredible because we were, you know, Juan Schneider is in Japan. Bellman is in goalkeeper coach of Caixinha and Cruz Azul, the one who was at Rangers. And the other ones are in Spain. Fernando Cáceres is in Argentina, Dario Franco as well. And we are all over the place. But we're still connected because we have that day. Yeah? 10th of May, 1995, in Paris. And that, it will be there forever. It will never change. That date is our date, you know?
How did Real Zaragoza
I don't know.
Find itself in Paris against the mighty Arsenal?
We didn't prepare ourselves for that. We played the first game Gloria Bistrita in Romania or whatever it was, and we're thinking, okay, it's Europe.
You got some goals there, I think.
Yeah, I scored, yeah. And then we get through, and then you're thinking, okay. And then when it came to Feyenoord, quarterfinals, we realized that we were at the highest level, because when we play away in Holland at Feyenoord, it was amazing there.
Yeah.
And we play an outstanding game, and we lost 1-0. Larsson.
Henrik Larsson, yeah.
And then you realize, okay, if we turn this around, who knows? And then Chelsea. Okay, not Chelsea Abramovich, but Chelsea with Glenn Hoddle and
Mikey and Scott Minto.
Yeah, Scott Minto, yeah, my mate. And then, yes, we got there. Like any final, you think about winning. You know that you're playing against the current champions, because Arsenal was the champions the year before. But we play our game. The Arsenal tried to stop us from playing our game. For 10 minutes, 15 minutes, they kick us and they foul us and they did everything.
Can I cheat? Because quite recently we had an interview with a former Everton and Sunderland midfielder, Don Hutchison, and he gave us one of the most pungent descriptions of Martin Keown I've ever heard in my life. When you talk about Arsenal kicking and punching and whatever, the team was Seaman, Dixon, Winterburn, Keown, Adams, Stephen Schwartz, Ray Parler, Ian Wright, John Hartson, Paul Merson, Andy Linnigan. Hartson booked in 2 minutes.
Yes. Terrible tagging on Naeem.
It was a bad one.
Spurs, no, probably was something there.
didn't really seem to stop Naeem in any way. Talk about the physical side of that first part of the game, as Arsenal tried to say, are you up for this? Was Keown involved?
It was incredible. It was an action. And I remember when I was involved, I went to jump, and these two Arsenal players, I think it's Keown and Parlo, they come in both. You know when you jump...
Sandwich.
To win a ball and to clash. And they pull out in the last second, and they hit each other, and one got a cut. I mean, it's there, it's in the highlights of the game, because the first four or five actions is that. We didn't think about that, funny enough, before the game. We were so convinced in our game that we went in to play, and then one, and then two, and then boom, and then jump, and Snyder fighting with Adams. Snyder said it so many times, he tried everything to get Adams out of the game, told him, and he couldn't. He got Tony Adams, got Snyder out of the game because he kept clashing, you know, like it was no pain. But we were a special group. We were good personalities. We had the character. We had something special in there. You know, it was experienced players as well, so it wasn't easy. I think if it's a young team, maybe you get away. Yeah, you finish. You lose that game. We were able to cope with those 15, 20 minutes, and then we relaxed it. We played very well the second half. I think we didn't deserve to go into the extra time, but football finals.
Little things attract me. Can you remember, it's Parc des Princes, there are 42,000 people there. The Arsenal fans are very noisy. Could you hear the Zaragoza fans?
Well, especially in the beginning, because for us it was the only final, the only and only one. So they were very excited. I think it was a moment that the Arsenal fans, they come out, is when they scored the equaliser. At that moment, Arsenal thought, okay, here we're going to win the game. Then in extra time, the image that I got before Naeem goal is our fans celebrating. Celebrating the 1-1 that we got to penalties. But it's only our fans singing, the Zaragoza fans, you know, thinking, okay, we got you here, now we got to penalties.
Because it's minute 120.
Yeah, no, listen, it's incredible. The goal is not going to be nothing like that one. It's not going to repeat. I think the Parc des Princes should put something behind that goal. They say Naeem score a goal in here in 119, 50 seconds from the halfway line. And they don't listen to me. I was probably taking a penalty. I don't even know.
No, you hadn't talked about the penalty order.
Well, we had a few. The problem is that, for example...
Pardesa would have taken one.
Pardesa would have taken, but Paquete Higuera, who took in the final Copa del Rey the year before, the fifth, it was out of the pitch. So you were thinking, okay, somebody's going to have to step up. You know, I would say Santi Aragón will take one, Naeem will take one. We made a change just 20 seconds before the goal that it changed completely the action. Incredible. That Heli went in to have a penalty, because it's incredible. Football, people doesn't understand the things that can happen in a game. Najum was playing the left at the end of the game. But because we're going to go to penalties, the manager decides to put Heli in the 118th.
Heli comes on. Heli. Yeah.
So Heli has to go to the left, which means that Najim has to come to the right. And then it's a goal kick. And I try to flick it, and Adam kick the ball and give it to Najim chest, sorry, and it goes, bang.
So it drops, it's in the air. It should be penalty. As you can see and hear your fans, it's dropping onto Naeem's chest.
Just 5, maybe 6, 7 metres past halfway line.
Into Arsenal's half.
Yeah, into Arsenal's half.
And he's now on the right of the
right
pitch.
Side, yeah, 5, as well, 6 metres from the touchline.
Gus, freeze time.
Me?
Where are you? What are you thinking?
Me, when he chested, I was just coming out of the jump, because I jumped with someone in the middle of the park and the ball went past and Adams headed out. So I'm turning to see what Najim is going to do. Simple. He got the ball control in front of him, just bouncing. And when he hit it, we tried to... It like everything, it's incredible, but it's true. It's like everything stopped. You only see the ball fly. And the ball fly and you see him and going backwards. You know... I don't know how it is. It's a second, 2 seconds, I don't know. But it looks forever, because you want the ball to go in and you don't want Seaman to save it, but you don't know. And when it touches in the net, no, I cannot, no, there is no explanation. No, it's impossible. You will never see a goal celebrated so badly. Everybody run anywhere. Yes, because normally you run together, or I don't know, you have something. No, it's terrible. The coach gets into the pitch. I got a cramp. The other one, it's incredible. I mean, it's crazy, because it's unexpected. Just for people to know, which is nice. 2 days later, we go to La Romareda, Stadium of Zaragoza. We get a ball each. We put ourselves in the same position, but in La Romareda, not the Parc des Princes. Nobody there. We just bounce the ball and try to hit Najim thing. We probably hit it 50. I can tell you, no one went that close to the crossbar in the second post and the way that Najim hit it. Yeah, there were a few goals there, bouncing before, or bouncing just in, or bending a little bit. We missed the goal by 20 meters. But no one from 50 shots without pressure went in at that moment. And that one, you want to talk about football.
But like, how long did it take the effects of the alcohol to wear off after you won the cup? Maybe that impossible to repeat it. Was anybody sober?
Listen, war celebration as well. We didn't have anything prepared. Manager didn't want that, because he thought, if we have something prepared and we lose, it's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
So then we go back to the hotel. And then it's
not. Room service.
No, me, if anyone really wants to follow us and listen to us, have 5 minutes and try to check Plaza del Pilar, Zaragoza, the 11th of May. It's like García San Juan, the player who left the pitch for Heli. We said to everybody, I don't remember too much of the game, he said, but I do remember the celebrations in Zaragoza.
Because you flew home.
We flew home the day after. We went to the Romareda, we got changed, and we got in a bus. Unfortunately, it was not an open bus at that time. And we went into the main square in Zaragoza, which is in front of La Basilica del Pilar, in Pilar. You know, I accept whatever number you want. You know, people say 100,000, people say 250,000. It doesn't matter. What I can tell you is, it was no one space in that square. In every single road going up and side and left, it was the whole city down in there. We were in a balcony in the council. Is how many people you can make happy with a game of football. Victor Fernandez, the manager, defined it that, I'm trying to translate it to English, like the biggest social movement in the history of Zaragoza. And that means something.
Good phrase.
I think, because it was, people was coming out of schools when we were going with the bus, coming out of the houses. It was like a cycling tour, you know. We had behind like cars, motorbike, following the bus. Everything would stop at the city because we were coming in, and amazing.
Did any of the doctors talk about the birth boom 9 months later?
Well, we know, because that's the truth. Funny enough, we had all babies the same time, the boom, baby boom. It was the final before, after the final before as well, because they were all there, the wife without the kids.
So this is why you stopped winning finals, just to...
Yeah, no more babies.
Smaller families.
No more
babies. I understand this. We're kind of lucky in that we have supporters, sponsors called Bet365. They've sent in two questions. I'm going to start with this one because it's going to lead me to my next question. So Bet365 want to know, who is, or if you want to go, who are, who's the best player you've managed?
I had to pick one that, even if I was not the main coach, the manager, I see him every day and I enjoyed every second, which is Modric.
At Spurs.
He's capable of doing things so easy. His stability, the way the balance, the way he can go either way, the way he makes decisions to go pass or to stop, the way he sees football, how open and how calm he's on the ball, how much he can run. It was really, really impressive. Every day, day in, day out. Every single day, he will do things in training that we say he's top. So when he went to Madrid, it was not a surprise for me.
Two things about that then. He's not Iniesta, but few players are described as making difficult things easy. That's something that links those two players. Yeah. To make people understand, when you say Modric made things easy, he made, I guess you mean everything, difficult things, things that other players overcomplicate. He didn't do that.
He didn't do that because sometimes you will pass the ball to Modric in a very difficult situation and he will get away because he understands the game, understands the position, and he will do the right thing at the right time. With others, they will panic and block themselves or hurry up and lose it or whatever, make a mistake. He was so confident and calm in his ability to make the opposition go the wrong way. He's a typical guy that is in front of you. He will do something that you will go one way, he will go the other. Facing you or back to you. And going forward or going back or stopping. So he got that balance and that ability to go either way at any time. I was really pleased when he won the best player of the world. I was pleased because he confirmed what I'm saying to you. I'm looking in there in 2008, and I'm thinking, this guy is really special. It's different, it's unique. And I'm pleased for him. He had a great year.
It links to the guy who was coached him to win the Champions League so often, not every time, because Ancelotti coached him one of his four Champions League wins, was Zidane. Mm-hmm. And Zidane's idol was Francescoli.
Yes, Enzo.
So I can't let this opportunity go by, because in Europe at least, we didn't see so much live of Enzo. We've heard a little bit about Enzo from Chris Waddle in Marseille. But try to make Enzo Francescoli come alive, the footballer, to the people who are listening. But give us what's so special?
Well, just shortly, I would say an incredible leader. On the pitch, outside the pitch. He will represent the players. He will defend his teammates to the end. You will have a problem, he will sort it out. It was incredible. For example, me playing with him at the Copa America 95, what I like the most, every time I look up, he was available. Somehow. You know, you're in the middle of trouble with the ball there that you cannot get out, and you look, and he's free, and asking for the ball. And you will give it to him, and he will sort it out the rest. He will get a foul, he will get you out, he will make a dribble, he will score the winning goal, he will make the last pass, he will take responsibility. So it was that guy, he was always there for you. Okay? It was, I would say that we all will define him as a number 10, but I think he was a 9.5. Because at the end of his career, when he started playing more up front, he scored so many goals, he has so more technical ability. I think now we recreate ourselves with these players coming, you know, right foot is coming from the right in and bending in the second post, or left foot, Messi. He done it in the 90s, okay? Francesco, he done it many, many times. He got incredible goals scoring like that. But I think the best thing for any football player that he like him, like Zidane, is how he accepted the responsibility of being that leader on the pitch. I got no doubt. That's why he impressed you the most. He was a player that he will dribble well, he will finish well, he will find him somebody. Like I said to you, always available, always take responsibility. I mean, in that Copa America, he gets a tackle in the last minute of the game. His shoulder is out. They put it back.
Dislocated.
And he needs to come back, because if you don't finish the game on the pitch, you cannot take a penalty, I think, something like that. So he's coming into the pitch like dying just to have those 5 minutes between the end of the game and the penalty shootout to get it a little bit in position and free to take a penalty. I wouldn't take it.
Anybody who's brave enough to let somebody shove their arm back into the socket just is brave, number one. Then to go out and think you can take a penalty.
I mean, it was... he deserved it as well, because incredibly it was always a question mark in Uruguay on him with the national team, because he made his career in River Plate in Argentina, Europe, and River Plate Argentina, so it was always like outside, so we were always asking him more. I would tell you, I think that if you talk to a River Plate fan from that era, he would recognize more Francesco than some Uruguayans, which is really unfair, and it hurts me, because I play with him. I know, you know, what he done for me and how important it was for me. So I would like people from Uruguay to really understand that, you know, and to feel the same that I was feeling when I was in that Copa America.
Thank you for joining us for season 2018-19. We've got huge creative plans for the months ahead, but we do need your help to make them happen. Please go right now to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and become a socio, become a paying member, and get an extra big interview every month, plus loads of bonus content. Last season, socios listened to 9 exclusive big interviews, including Rafa van der Vaart, Troy Deeney, Roberto Di Matteo, and loads of me talking about football. The Premier League, the Champions League, Spanish football. I'm sure they enjoyed it and you will too. Support us, join us. Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.